You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Brightest day, blackest night. No evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power. Green Lantern's life.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello everybody and welcome to Film Actually, episode 143 for the 13th of August 2011. I am David McVeigh and this is Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. I was wondering, your finger kind of swung around the room.
I forgot the ear at the far end of the table there for a minute there.
Wait a minute, that's not Josh.
And that voice you're hearing, of course, is our guest this week again, Richard Gray from TheRealBits.com. Yeah, I think we need to drop the guest title. And just say...
I just got my name changed by deed poll to guest Richard Gray.
Oh, damn. Oh, well. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. And this week we are going to review Green Lantern, as that opening clip would suggest. Plus we have a little bit of film news, including brand new trailers for the film 50-50, which is a film that I'm very eager to see. Yes. And a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. Now, I'd like to point out that I thought one of the stars went off to work for the White House. That's why he quit House. And what's his name? The Indian.
Kumar. Guy who plays Kumar, his name is... Oh,
it's gone out of my head as well. You'll have to look for it for me. It's gone out of my head. Right, he actually basically...
Calpen, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. He left House because he was a regular in House. They killed his character off because he got appointed to the White House. And he was giving up on everything to go work for... And now suddenly he shows up in Harold and Kumar again.
Yeah, some things you got to come back for.
Something happened. We don't know. Anyway, we'll have a look at that trailer as well, because as much as it shames me, Harold and Kumar is very much a guilty pleasure of mine.
Dude, it's not guilty at all. It's freaking hilarious. I love that show.
We also have a brand new list of five this week, which is five movies with a color in the title, once again inspired by Green Lantern. So Josh is not happy. But first, we have some feedback.
I found your movies.
Beat
me, but... Oh, yeah. I'm just saying.
We do have some feedback. First of all, we got one from Joe the Giraffe.
Awesome name.
Who says, "Hi there, Joe the Giraffe here, writing in finally to tell you guys that I think you're awesome."
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much.
They make me feel good.
Living in Edinburgh, Scotland, I have only ever managed to coincide my schedule with yours once and made it onto the Tron Christmas special.
That's right. I remember.
Yes. And I was welcomed. I don't think it was actually a Christmas special, though. But anyway, it was a special. That's
it
all
came
it
out
knows.
Near Christmas.
It did. And we also have to big shout out to Fox 4649 for being on that show, because he was awesome. From the Real Junkies podcast. All right. He says, "And I was welcomed not only in the chat room, but also by you lovely gentlemen in the show with a warmth that made me smile."
Aww.
See, you come to our chat room and we give you a warmth that makes you smile. Although our chat room has disintegrated today. I think it's because we're so late in the day. We had a lot of problems getting started today. We had technical issues. All right. So he says, "Your humor and camaraderie is outshone only by your genuine intelligent insight and critical evaluations."
Jesus, man, this guy's far too nice.
My head is getting bigger as we speak. My headphones aren't going to be able to fit soon.
Checks into my ultra.
Film Actually lets me know what I should go and see, and Geek Actually fills me in on all the pointless tech I shouldn't buy. you guys are a pleasure to my ears and add a brightness to the magnificent Scottish weather system that can only be equaled by the eternally angry... he says, "that can only be equaled by the eternally angry Game Arena podcast. Sorry, Josh."
Hey, you know what, man? It's Dave that perpetuates the myth that we don't like Gap. I think Gap is just too long. Every time, like, there is a huge amount of respect that goes out to Job and the boys over there, because I don't think I could do 3 hours a week of just talking games. I mean, it's not like it's really games. It sort of starts as games and then disappears off into nothingness and obscurity. But yeah, no, look,
quite frankly, I actually had to stop listening to Gap. It is too long. That's the point.
But look, Everybody who does listen to Gap and us will be pleasured to know that they have a 100th show coming up, and we are going to crash it in the good way, not the bad way.
No.
And by us, you're referring to DLC.
DLC, yeah. Of course. Sorry.
I hope you are never presented with any kind of reason to stop. It would take away a great pleasure from me and a valuable insight without which I would be much worse off. Keep doing your thing, boys, Joe. And then a second email came in almost immediately afterwards, and it simply says, from Joe the Giraffe, it simply says, keep Richard, he's awesome.
It's true.
Just adjust my headphones. Yeah.
Adjust your headphones there, Richard. All right, so thank you very much, Joe.
Of course, there was a stack of email, you know, this big of, you know, get rid of Richard, he's shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hide those from you.
Yeah.
They go in the pile of like 600 I bring angry chocolates. Emails. We get a win.
We also got one from our good friend Geek Betty, who says, a bit like your list of fives, the cool French hipsters is really just too cool. Comments at the bottom of the link last week's blog, which was best car chases through LA River Basin. And what she's referring to is a website called ClipJoint, and the link is in our show notes. Basically, all they do is basically what we do, lists of five, but they do it with YouTube clips.
Nice.
So they go best five car chases, and then they have the five YouTube clips and so forth. It's a lot of fun, and she actually says, very dangerous time suck. Right? And I do agree with that. So thank you very much, Geek Betty.
That's an awesome name for porno, by the way. Very dangerous time suck.
That's what she said. Now, Mike from Canada has written in as well and said, dear Josh.
Oh, God.
How dare you, sir?
Bring it. What have you got?
I can't believe you, of all people, would stoop to threaten me.
Over what? What did I say?
Remember last week you said you were going to hit him? Over changing your titles to Minority Report? He says, to quote Bugs Bunny, this means war.
It's on.
So I fixed your list again, Josh. I had to change your number one film, Jumanji, to the far superior film, Minority Report. Minority Report fits great into the great animal film category because humans are animals. Also, they had mechanical spiders. Now, watch your mouth, Josh, or your number two will be replaced with the Wild Wild West.
Just because you're doing the list, man, doesn't mean I don't have your email address.
And he says, good day to you, sir. Dave and special guest, it's been a pleasure.
And you know what, man? I'd like to, following on from what we were talking about at the Geek Show, I would like to think you're on my Facebook list, which means I've got your phone number, bitch. Remember it.
I don't know if you heard that last part, but he actually goes on to say, Dave and special guest, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, let's just see whether or not you get a couple of million tote bag emails over the next few weeks.
Keep up the just good work, watch. Mike from Canada. Now, just to explain to anybody who might be a first time listener, we're very good friends with Mike from Canada, and it is actually all in good fun.
Oh, we were.
And I would like to point out, Josh, we have a vaulted film. So, Mike, for those who don't know, Mike from Canada is actually doing our list of five on our Facebook page. He has completely updated the list, and he is keeping a spreadsheet so that he keeps up to date with our list of five. And we were saying last week, we're sure we've got a few films that might be vaulted by now. Apparently, we hadn't up until that point. But last week, with Richard and I both putting Jaws on our list, Jaws has vaulted.
Is it vaulted based on all of us?
It is vaulted on
it?
Being mentioned five times.
Ah, okay.
Being on a list five
Jaws
times.
Jaws is officially off the list.
So cool. Any film, any list from now on.
I still have two
on,
and three to go.
We can no longer have Jaws on a list
no
of
No one
five.
Likes those ones.
For those who don't know what the vault is, it's a new thing that we've started on the site. We're going to open the page probably this week. Basically, any film that is brought up five times on a list of five is vaulted, which means it can no longer be used on a list because it's just assumed that that film is just genius. And there's no point in mentioning it anymore. And you can go check. You'll be able to check our vault list as we add things to the vault. Nice. There'll only be one thing on it to start with, but I'm sure things will start vaulting pretty fast now. Mm. There's a long set of lists that we've got going there.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, and we also have another one. This is kind of like an FYI. This is also from our good friend Geek Betty, sent this through. Now, anybody who owns the DVD to The Shining knows that there is a wonderful behind-the-scenes documentary shot by Kubrick's daughter, where it's basically just a fly on the wall. She's just roaming around with the camera, and she gets some really candid behind-the-scenes stuff. Apparently, I don't know for how long, because they were saying they were going to kill Google Video, but apparently it's on Google Video right now. So if you don't have the Shining DVD, the link is in our show notes. You can go over and have a look at this spectacular behind-the-scenes documentary. Nice. It's really good. And she actually wrote, Mr. Kubrick let his daughter do a bit of doco filming during the making of The Shining. Not sure if Mr. Nicholson is all that happy about it. And if you actually watch it, you'll know what it means, because she's kind of following him around a lot. And
I've seen this doco, yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's very good. All right, that's our feedback. What have we been watching this week, boys?
Oh, God, I've forgotten already. Quick. You go, Josh.
That is a sign that you watch far too many movies.
Jesus Christ.
If you can't remember what you've been watching.
I'm just trying to make sure. The problem with doing this every week is I always find that I'm never sure if I'm repeating myself.
This is why I keep a list of everything I watch.
Yeah, exactly. No, the big thing that I've been watching lately, which has basically been taking up all my movie watching time, is I finally sat down and started watching that series that somebody suggested to me when I was suggesting Samurai Champloo, which is a great show. Yeah. And I finished that, and then somebody immediately jumped out of the woodwork and went, if you've seen that, you must see this show. Now, I got hold of it, and it's 75 episodes long, so it's a nice short one. But the whole thing is, kudos to the person who has put it out there, and I won't name him live because, you know, I don't know how he feels about it. But, yeah, no, the show is called Monster. It is a fantastic anime. Like, it is really, really, like, my biggest problem with anime now, and Richard would probably be able to weigh in on this as well, is anime has got to the point where it's just so cliche. Like, we've actually pushed past the point of it being funny and humorous and different, because that was the reason we all went to it in the first place. Because it was just so off the wall and so bizarre. And then it just started to become repetitive. It was all the same stuff. And late anime, a lot of it is really average.
Absolutely.
This show is almost more Western than it is Eastern, but it's still really good. It's set in Germany, and it follows a doctor, and immediately what I thought was going to end up in a whole bunch of cliches, within the first sort of episode of the series, he makes a decision based on the fact that he believes he's being used as a pawn to take care of the rich and famous instead of dealing with people that are important, and he has to deal with the fact that because he saved someone's life, the patient he had dies, and that person was legitimately first in line. And so the second time round, when this happens, he's like, nah, forget this, I'm going to do the right thing, leaves the mayor of whatever place he's in and goes back to the operating table and basically fixes this child that's been shot in the head. You then find out that child is actually incredibly evil and murders a whole bunch of people and then disappears for 5 years. This is in the first episode. Like, and you're just sitting there going, I'm going to like this show.
I was going to say, he's a great writer, that guy. And I've just quickly looked him up. Naoki Urasawa wrote the manga that it's based on. He also did a series that people might be familiar with called 20th Century Boys, which was epic. And it was when they adapted it as a film, they did it as three films. So it ends up being about a 6-7 hour it's essentially one film that they made, because they made them all back to back. Got released in three parts because it was they didn't want to release a 7 hour film. But 20th Century Boys, it's an amazing achievement as well. And Monster, I've only read bits of. I've not actually seen the anime yet, but it is he's a great storyteller.
Well,
he's
thing
great
that
at doing
I love
just what you just said.
Exactly, the thing that I love, and it's got it written down there. He is the master of suspense in things. It's like, it's not a gory show, but it is terrifying to watch because it's just, you really understand the psychological damage that a lot of these people have in this film based on the experiences they have to deal with. And especially, and this isn't a spoiler, when you find out, because there are two twins, there's the child who was fixed, who is the boy, and there's the girl. And when you catch up 5 years later with the girl, she's had a family that has completely basically written out her early history and just replaced it with fake memories. Like, they've just basically told her lies her entire life. And as he starts coming back into her life, the damage that that causes is just so well written. Like you were saying, it's like it is a mastery of both writing and suspense. It's like the amount of moments in the show that will just keep you locked into the TV.
I do
is
love a
awesome.
Good anime series. I must have a look at that.
Yeah, no, it's I have to say, so far, I mean, again, I'm only 7 episodes in now, but they are long episodes.
And
so
a long way to go by the sounds of it.
But I'm so far incredibly impressed with what I've seen.
Cool. Richard, what have you been watching?
Well, in addition to the movie that we're reviewing today, Green Lantern, I've also seen a couple of films in the last week. I saw Pom Wonderful Presents, the greatest movie ever sold.
Yep, and you can also go to Geek Actually or your site and listen to our interview with Morgan Spurlock.
Which is, yeah, I mean, look, it's excellent interview, David.
Thank
and
you.
Also, it's also an excellent film. So it's a real, I mean, we're all sort of familiar with the fact that, you know, this product placement in films or embedded advertising, as it's called.
It's pretty obvious, actually.
It's pretty obvious, but the extent to which people go to actually make this stuff happen is amazing. Mm. A couple of other films I saw this week, just quickly, another documentary, Senna, which a lot of people are raving about.
Yeah.
And they're saying it's like the greatest documentary because it's all made from archival footage. There's no new stuff in there. And they said, oh, even if you're not into racing, you're going to love this. I didn't feel that at all. I thought it was a... one of the most boring pieces of shit.
Look, I gotta tell you, I saw the trailer for it and felt the same way.
It's as exciting as watching cars go round and round a track. So if you're into that, just pick it up. Two quick shout-outs. I saw an Australian film, Red Dog, which I know the trailer is probably putting a lot of people off, but it is so much fun, and it's done really well at the Australian box office. It deserves to do well. Mm. It's a kind of really...
Yeah,
it's
I was not keen to see this, but after hearing you talk about it, I'm kind of thinking maybe I need
it's
to
It's a throwback to kind of an old-fashioned style of filmmaking. It's a throwback to Australian films from almost two decades ago. It's just fun.
Which was, for me, the better era of Australian
films, just fun. And, of course, I have to cop to having seen Glee, the 3D concert movie this week.
I wanted to see that.
Which, you know, I've never seen an episode of the show before watching the movie. I've seen one episode since then, which was the Rocky Horror episode. Just happened to be on cable this week. But, the songs are all covers because, it's basically the most overproduced cover band. So the live show is just basically a really overblown covers band, but it's and it's in 3D, which is in the case of some of the girls on that show is pretty awesome.
I want to see Brittany in 3D.
Brittany in 3D is frankly hot, and I can say that. Looked it up, she's 24. So
she's hot in the series, man.
So it's actually really,
and a magnificent dancer.
Her sequence in the movie is like, if you're into song and dance routines, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Look, I actually want to say I am a fan of the series. I actually really like Glee. I think Glee is a lot of fun. I think they're a very talented bunch of young kids, and to see them just get up and do a concert is like, you know, strip out everything else out of the show and just watch the musical numbers. There's no problem with that. I have no problem with the Glee concert movie, you know.
Yeah.
I have no interest at all in seeing the Justin Bieber movie.
No,
but you know, the Glee concert movie, I wouldn't have minded at all.
It's just fun. And of course, speaking of fun, I also saw Cowboys and Aliens this week, you guys will probably talk about next week. And I saw a documentary last night, which interestingly enough had the same composer as Cowboys and Aliens, called Life in a Day. Now, this is the only movie you will see that has both YouTube and Ridley Scott listed as producers in the credits. And this is this movie where they put out and they asked for people to submit footage of what they were doing on a particular day.
Yeah.
And they can pile it all together to give a day in the life of the world.
Yeah, they premiered it on YouTube about a month ago or a month and a half ago, something like that, briefly, and then now it's got its cinema runs.
Yeah.
So it's an epic achievement in putting this together.
It's interesting. It doesn't always work. It's sporadically successful.
Yeah. I'm curious to see that, actually.
I'm waiting for the YouPorn parody.
I also saw Cowboys and Aliens this week as well. We are going to do it as a feature. Next week, we're going to do something that we don't do often, but we have to next week. It's going to be double review show. We don't do a double review often because it often stretches the show out. But next week, we've got Cowboys and Aliens and Conan the Barbarian coming out. So we're going to have to do a double show next week. But I saw Cowboys and Aliens, and brief, we'll cover it more next week in a deep interview. I've got my review online now, though. So basically, I'm not entirely sure what movie the critics are seeing.
No.
Because I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. And we'll talk in more detail next week about it. But go read my review on geekactually.com.
Or mine on therealbits.com.
Or on therealbits. Yours wasn't up last time I looked.
So. Oh, it went up late last night.
Oh, okay, so. There you go. I actually honestly don't know what everybody else is watching.
Yeah, I've spoken to people since then and they've hated it. And I think that's such a strong reaction to a movie that's, at the bare minimum, a bit of fun.
I look at it and go, it's got cowboys and it's got aliens. Everything's in the title.
It does what it says it's going to do on the box.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think a movie since the assassination of Jesse James from the Coward,
Robert Ford,
has ever just stated what's in the film in its title any more clearly. The other film I rewatched this week, I rewatched Dark Star. I picked up the Hyperdrive edition, the two-disc edition, and Dark Star is one of those films that no matter what mood I'm in will always bring a smile to my face. I just absolutely adore this film. If you haven't seen Dark Star, it's a very, very, very low budget, $65,000 student film. It was actually his graduation film, or John Carpenter's graduation film, written by Dan O'Bannon, who went on to write Alien. And John Carpenter, of course, we all know who John Carpenter is.
Who's he?
director of Halloween, The Thing, etc. This is just basically a film.
It's not ringing a bell.
A film about a bombed out ship. With the guys going completely stir crazy because their entire job is to fly around the universe just blowing up unstable planets, and they are completely out of their minds because they've been out there for 20 years, and they're all hippies, and you know, it is really funny. You haven't seen Dark Star?
No, I never have. I have to cop to having ever seen it.
Wow,
I know.
I'm gonna have to sit you down and watch Dark Star because it's a fantastic
Clockwork Orange style.
Yeah, but pin your eyes open. The other film I watched. I watched last night, and I'm not going to talk about it right now because it's actually in my list of five, so I'll talk about it then. So,
all right.
So I think it's fair to say that I will come back to that. Mm. All right, so that's what we've been watching, and that's our feedback. So let's move on to this feature film review. Okay, Green Lantern, directed by Martin Campbell and written by... Now, ready? Greg Berlanti, Michael Green, Mark Guggenheim, and Michael Goldenberg. And I think any film with that many writers is already in trouble. Based on the DC Comics character. It stars Ryan Reynolds, Blake Lively, Peter Sarsgaard, Mark Strong, Tim Robbins, Tamura Morrison, Angela Bassett, and the voice talents of Michael Clark Duncan and Jeffrey Rush. Now, why I say the voice talents is because those two characters are computer animated. In a universe as vast, now this is a long synopsis, but this is Warner Brothers. This is what they're putting out. So this is the official Warner Brothers synopsis.
Can you read it as Jeffrey Rush?
No, but can you?
No.
In a universe as vast and mysterious.
No, neither of you can.
In a universe as vast as it is mysterious, a small but powerful force existed for centuries. Protectors of peace and justice, they are called the Green Lantern Corps. A brotherhood of warriors. Sorry, I'm mixing up my pages here. A brotherhood of warriors sworn to keep intergalactic order. Each Green Lantern wears a ring that grants him superpowers. But when a new enemy called Parallax threatens to destroy the balance of power in the universe, their fate and the fate of Earth lie in the hands of their newest recruit, the first human ever selected, Hal Jordan.
Wow.
Hal is gifted. I'm not finished yet. Hal is gifted. Hal is a gifted and cocky test pilot, but the Green Lanterns have little respect for humans who have never harnessed the infinite power of the ring before. Source, Warner Brothers. Okay.
I got exhausted just listening to that.
And you know
wow,
what?
That was a lot of words.
It was a lot of words. And you know what's really funny is I'm going to play you a trailer right now, which was the last trailer that came out just before this film was released, which is the 3D trailer, which I think sums up the entire film better than that synopsis does.
Yeah.
So, here it is.
Billions of years ago, a race of immortals harnessed the most powerful force in existence. The emerald energy of willpower. These immortals, the guardians of the universe, built a world from where they could watch over all of existence. The planet Oa. A ring powered by the energy of will was sent to every sector of the universe to select a recruit. In order to be chosen by the ring, it was said one must be without fear. Together, these recruits formed the intergalactic peacekeepers known as the Green Lantern Corps. The gravest threat the Corps ever faced was Parallax, an entity that fed on the yellow power of fear. After defeating the Corps' finest warrior, the search for a successor began.
Choose well.
And for the first time, the ring chose a human.
Welcome to
darkest night. No evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power.
Green Lantern, flight!
Can I just start by saying that I actually didn't hate this film? And that's damning praise, I know, because yeah, you should go, oh, I really enjoyed it. No,
that's on the poster. I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate this film. I actually was expecting to truly hate this movie. Mm. With all of the negative press, it's something I wrote in my review when I said that living down here in Australia, every now and again, we get these great long periods of time where films get delayed, mm-hmm. right? And that's a double-edged sword because there's the one aspect of it, which is that all hype dies off for this film and we're all really anxious for a film and then it doesn't come and by the time we get to it, it's like, oh, well, who cares, mm-hmm. you know? In the case of this film, though, I think it actually helped this film because all the bad press came out. We all went, oh, we don't want to see this movie anymore. So when we finally watch it going, this thing's going to be crap, we go, oh, it's actually not quite as bad as I expected it to be.
Well, actually, I was saying that ever since we found out that it was going to be delayed. I'm like, we're going to be a lot softer on this film than they will because we get 2 weeks to breathe before seeing it. So
well, actually,
like,
more like 5 weeks. So.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was sort of that whole thing where it was sort of like, that gives you some time to sort of read the reviews and go, well, that sounds like a bit of a stupid point to bring up, and that doesn't make any sense, and that sounds more like a personal opinion problem with the film. And it's, you start breaking down these reviews, and instead of just tearing things apart because you're like, well, all these things are wrong and more, you start going into it as an open book because you're kind of like, I want to see what you've got to give me. And this is that whole thing where I was saying, it's a bit like the reason that I don't go and watch Game of Thrones the second people say go watch it, because there's too much hype around it. And it's like, if you don't like it, then everybody looks at you weirdly. And if you have too high expectations and it's not as good as you think it's going to be, you're everybody else clouds your judgment. And it's like, by having that removed nature, we can kind of look at it as the film of two parts, which you and me have both come to the same conclusion.
Yeah, I think
on.
Richard did too.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens with critical reaction, though. There's this kind of like these waves of critics kind of all pumping out identical reviews. Because there's a kind of this judgment cloud, I think you put it, just happens around this time. And I think that we alluded to it briefly, Cowboys and Aliens. I think everyone just decided, yep, we're hating this week.
Well, it's interesting because I actually went through Rotten Tomatoes on Cowboys and Aliens, and we're not doing Cowboys and Aliens now, but just very quickly. And it's really interesting because the ones that were negative, which is most, what they're criticizing is something that I don't think deserved to be criticized. Because they're all looking at it going, oh, it's not fun enough. Oh, it doesn't have that camp nature to it. Oh, it's not. And you're just going, where did you get the impression that it was going? Because they're all saying, lot of them actually said it wasn't funny enough. And you just then go, where did you get the impression this was supposed to be a comedy?
Yeah. Oh, it's based on a comic book.
It's based on a comic book. But if you actually watch the trailer is not funny. You know? And it's like you sit there and go, I don't understand where you got the idea that this was going to be a camp.
Ryan Reynolds was in it.
A camp romp. No, I'm talking about Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, really?
This is what they're saying about Cowboys and Aliens. Yeah. You sit there and go, I don't understand where you got this idea. It's because the title is so silly, I think.
Whereas with Green Lantern, they obviously went for a large comic element to it.
That's right.
And I think that's the complaint then is that it's too silly.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree to some extent. There is a lot of silliness in this film, but that's not the problem. The Green Lantern, when you break it down to its core, it's a really tough sell.
Would that be the Green Lantern core?
The Green Lantern core. I see what you did there. it's a stupid concept. We were talking about this before the show. It's a dude in various incarnations has not been able to fight wood or yellow. And he gets his power from a ring where he has to speak an oath in order to charge it up. Now, they play with the origin story a little bit in there. I should say, full disclosure, I'm a massive DC Comics fan. So I wanted this to work. And saying, once you get past that initial thing, but I think that's the bit that they do really well in the film, is the origin story. Everything else should be an easy sell. But then they fucked it up.
Yeah.
And I think and they didn't completely fuck it up, but it was a kitchen sink approach. It's kind of like, well, we've got Parallax as the villain, but we kind of need something on Earth too, so let's throw in Hector Hammond as well. And okay, he, let's, you know, and then they have that story. They go, right, let's go back to this whole end of the world thing as well. I mean, yeah. The end
and,
of
and
the then, world.
And the relationships are so, the relationships on Earth are so thinly set up.
It's like they all knew each other, apparently.
Well, that's right.
They,
it's like, oh, well, we need to make some sort of motivation. So let's make Hammond actually have known Hal Jordan at some point.
Right,
and then out of the blue, suddenly Hector Hammond's got the hots for Blake Lively. And you sit there and go, how is this even fitting together? You know, it's like it's so slim.
That was the unbelievable bit, that anybody would meet Blake Lively and still like her.
I feel that.
Yeah.
I mean, like you say, it's a tough sell. And, you know, you try your best to kind of distance yourself from what is essentially a very longly spun out series, which has slowly got more adult and more collected as it's gone on. If you look back at the old comics, no offense, but they're fucking silly. And I can't do them. I actually can't.
I think Green Lantern really came of age for me was in the 70s when it was the Green Lantern, Green Arrow double ups. That's kind of where they really kind of formed the Green Lantern we know today.
And that's true of a lot of comics. When you look back, you look at the really early ones, even Spider-Man and the ones that are done really well as films, the origin story is pretty basic and it's pretty stupid. Dude gets bitten by a radioactive spider. You know, Hal Jordan's origin story is no more ridiculous than a billionaire who watches his parents get murdered and decides to dress up as a bat to fight crime. You know, when you break down.
Well, when you distill it down like that.
Well, when you distill it down like that. But that's what movies do. That is still the origin. They distill 40, 50 years worth of comics, sometimes 70 years worth of comics into
but
hour
they,
and a half.
And they usually do a reasonable job. And they've done that with this. I mean, like, you know,
I think it's faithful. It's faithful, but then it does what every comic book movie, bad comic book movie does. And this is not a terrible, it's not a train wreck by any means.
Yeah.
But it gets cold feet and decides, oh, we better do our own thing.
You know what, man?
I think
I coined a term when I walked out of the cinema and I said they George Lucas'd it.
Yeah,
and my meaning behind that is basically that along the way they decided that they needed to fix their film, and they fixed their film by adding terrible romance, like George Lucas-esque writing, kind of
the sand, it gets in everything.
Yeah, and just like, you know, those face strokes and the emotionally retarded people that they put in these roles.
I know,
and
right?
Yeah.
Oh, so I just want to say quickly on that point.
Yeah.
Green Lantern is a dick in this film. Hal Jordan is an absolute dick.
Yeah.
And he's not in the comics. He's a bit cocky.
Yeah, somebody, but, our chat room has already said, Callisynth in our chat room has already said, I think Ryan Reynolds was the wrong cast for...
Well, it's interesting because it was like, it doesn't... I don't quite get why they thought they could sell him.
Well, one of the if you remember going way back, because we've been talking about Green Lantern for an awful long time on this show, if you remember way back, one of the first names that was being bandied about to play Hal Jordan was...
Bradley Cooper?
Bradley Cooper. That's right. And Bradley Cooper would have been perfect as Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the suave good looks. He's got that kind of cocksure nature to himself and everything else that a test pilot needs. But he's not a clown.
Yeah.
You know? And problem with Ryan Reynolds is at his core he's a clown. You know? And he's not... It never really feels like he's taking it too seriously. And if you go back to when Richard Donner made the 1978 Superman, he said the secret to doing a film like this is to play it dead straight because then the humor comes out of that. If you try and play it for laughs, it becomes camp. Whereas if you play it dead straight, you'll get humor.
Absolutely.
You know? And that's Green Lantern needed to be played dead straight.
And there's so many scenes in the film that I almost feel like Ryan Reynolds flicked them a joke idea and they just ran with it. Like the first time he tries to put the suit on. And I'm just like, this feels like everybody was sitting down going, we have to pad this section out. What do we do?
I should point out as well, there was a script floating around for ages where Jack Black was going to play Green Lantern. Now, does anyone remember this?
No. I don't remember that.
I was doing a bit of research on it this week as well. This story was floating around for the longest time, about 3-4 years ago, maybe a bit longer, because this film's presumably been in production for a little while. Jack Black was they tailored a script for Jack Black to play Green Lantern as a completely comic film, and it would be a comical film, I should say. And it was going to be
a touch of Green Hornet happening.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they were going to just sort of play it as a, you know, slightly overweight guy gets the Green Lantern ring, what happens? You know, that kind of thing. And it was like, well, you know, we're all grateful that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But shades of that seem to be, like, studio fears about this character seem to be lingering in this script. And as you said, it's got 4 or 5 writers that, and that's just warning flags everywhere.
Exactly. You can tell that this thing's just been rewritten
and that doesn't take into account the story by credits.
And yeah. I think
and one of those might have been that Jack Black story.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think one of the main reason that this film got such a negative effect is because of how it's structured. It's like the first half, you are so in. Like, it's just, it's got a reasonable...
Yeah, I actually sat there watching it going, I don't know why people don't like this film. This is...
It's like, it's fun, it's interesting, it's got, you know, the direction slowly heads towards Zoa, and, you know, like, they pad it out long enough so they've set up their characters before you get the Zoa stuff, and then you go to Zoa, and I'm like, all right, this isn't bad, this is doing well. And then you get the second half.
And on that note, if my mouse will ever come back to life, where is my mouse? Hello, I have lost control of my board. Oh, here we go. There it is. I see it. And on that note, Josh, I actually have a clip from when he first arrives on Oa. Cool. So let's have a look at this. This is Green Lantern talking to Tomar Rae, which is voiced by Jeffrey Rush.
I've been sent to welcome you here.
And here is?
Welcome to Oa. This planet has been our home for countless millennia. Since time immemorial, the Green Lantern Corps has served as the keepers of peace, order, and justice throughout the universe. To be chosen to join its ranks is the highest of honors and the greatest of responsibilities.
Yeah, that part I heard about.
We're going to fly now.
Fly?
Absolutely.
All right. I can do that.
Join me.
Okay, so that's his arrival on Oa, basically. And you look at that and you go, yeah, that looks all right. You know?
Exactly. And it's like from the moment he gets back, it's like the writers just change entirely.
Well, and I love the fact that he goes there to be trained as a Green Lantern. He gets punched a couple of times and basically says, I quit.
Yeah.
And then dons the costume and suddenly he's a fully trained Green Lantern. And you go, wait a minute, when did he actually learn to do any of this? And, you know, it's like...
Well, it's all down to willpower, I thought, man. Isn't that the whole way that he found it in himself. And that's the way I actually took that.
It was behind the couch the whole time.
So in other words, why do they have to train lanterns?
They didn't. They had to teach him about how to use...
Because they said that Kilowog, voiced by Michael Clark Duncan, is he trains lanterns.
Yeah. Mm.
But he never trained anybody. You know?
He trained him the basics of how to do it. It's like it's so like Luke Skywalker, you know? He gets a little bit of training, then fucks off and learns the rest while he's out in the world, man. I'm just saying.
Callison says it'll be in the director's cut.
Yeah. The Rocky training.
Yeah, the Rocky. Yes, I was going the same way.
Training montage.
Oh, dear. All right. We also have to... HC Widget in our chat room has basically said this is why Ryan Reynolds will be a cool Deadpool, because he doesn't take anything seriously.
And well, also, and that he just doesn't seem to be able to stay on script.
No, exactly. And Deadpool's got that whole doesn't give a fuck attitude, which is what Ryan Reynolds excels at.
Exactly. You know? And you could just see him talking to the camera.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can see he's the kind of guy that would just get lost in his own thoughts and then just stare down the camera and talk to you.
Quite frankly, Green Lantern needed to be a cop.
Yeah.
That's what he is. You know, he's an intergalactic cop. And we needed to have somebody who could come up, feel like an intergalactic cop, you know? And he is destined to become one of the greatest lanterns. I don't see Ryan Reynolds becoming one of the greatest lanterns. You know, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't sit well, you know? And then on the other side of it, we get back to Earth. So I think we've all agreed that the Oa stuff is fine.
Great.
And it's very good science fiction, good visual effects and all great. Gets back to Earth and then we deal with Hammond and Ferris and all of these other human characters who are so thinly written that...
like you can tell they were added in.
Yeah, it feels like all of the Earth stuff just feels weak. And I'm sorry, Blake Lively... Richard actually said after screening, we were talking about Blake Lively and he said she was really good in The Town. I actually forgot she was in The Town because she is a completely different actress. She's the love interest in The Town. And she's a completely different person in The Town. And you sit there and look at it and go, who's in Green Lantern is not who's in the town. Something went very wrong with Green Lantern. But then, as we talked about afterwards, this is the Blake Lively of Gossip Girl. Mm-hmm. This isn't the Blake Lively that was directed by Ben Affleck, you know?
No.
And she is awful.
So perhaps Ben Affleck needs to direct the next.
Yeah.
The next Green Lantern. Or they need to recast Blake Lively, one of the two. But she is wooden and flat, and there is no sex appeal to her at all, and there is no chemistry between her and Hal Jordan at all. And
the unfortunate thing is she's such an integral character to that universe as well. It's not like they can just completely drop her and replace her with another love interest. Carol Ferris is the lowest lane of the Green Lantern universe. Mm. And she has people who know the comics know that she goes off and has her own Star Sapphire storyline, becomes a very strong character. And to cast someone so weak and powerless, I guess, in this film, and she didn't even come across as a convincing businesswoman, let alone as the potential of someone who's going to, you know, be a slight nemesis for Hal Jordan at some stage in the future.
Mm. You know? No, I agree.
Even as a pilot, that the 3 seconds we saw of her as a pilot.
Yeah, and I'm normally a fan of Tim Robbins and Angela Bassett, and neither of them were used to any effect in this film whatsoever. I will say, though, that the one star of this film is Sarsgaard. As Hector Hammond. I thought he just twitches and nervously works his way through this whole film. He had nothing to do, but he was fabulous. You know?
See, what's her name? Angela Bassett as Amanda Waller. DC Comics fans will know Amanda Waller is kind of, not quite, but a little bit of a Nick Fury sort of figure in the DCU. So I don't know whether they were just planting her in there in the hopes that they were going to eventually build their own universe.
Happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
This is my problem with the difference between the two is when Marvel does these things...
They go balls deep. And
they set up an important part which winks to you that there is a future for it. They don't throw these characters in willy-nilly and waste their appearances. Mm. You know what I mean? It's like... You don't get them throwing in Nick Fury and being like, and we're never going to use that again. So that's just to keep people interested.
Just to refresh my memory, because I'm more of a Marvel than a DC, but I have read a little bit of DC. Waller was actually Lex's right-hand man when he was president.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
But she, I think, I'm not sure if it's... I think she ran an organization called the Secret Six.
Yeah, she was. She worked on his administration.
Yeah. But then she sort of administers her own little team of... sort of subversive
That's her.
Superheroes as well. The Suicide Squad. That's who it was. She administers the Suicide Squad.
Sorry, I just had a flash of Life of Brian there for a second. Suicide Squad attack! Oh, dear. All right, so look, we're kind of waffling around the edges here. Let's talk about whether we were going to recommend this to anybody. Actually, before we do that, let's talk about one more person in the cast, because I think he actually did a pretty fine job, which was Mark Strong.
Oh, Mark Strong was excellent.
I think Mark Strong as Sinestro really kind of sold it. I was a bit worried because I thought, okay, they're just going to use his voice and he's going to be a CG character. But as it turns out, it actually is him in makeup. And then they CG'd the costume.
And the makeup's really good on him.
The makeup they did really well. I thought he did a really good job. I actually have a clip of Mark Strong here. Mm. We can actually have a look at him. This is Mark Strong giving one of his impassioned speeches to the Corps.
Mm.
Lanterns, I've called you here to this unprecedented gathering because we face an unprecedented danger. Our 4 Lantern brothers were killed by an enemy called Parallax. An enemy we don't yet fully understand. We do know it's powerful enough to destroy entire civilizations. Powerful enough to defeat even Abin Sur, our finest warrior, whose light can never be replaced. We have never been defeated. Will we be defeated now? No! It was for this moment that we were created, but I don't need to tell you your duty. I don't need to tell you who we are.
Did you notice in neither of the two times when they all point their rings at the sky, he's both looking around like, what?
Yeah, well,
it's
he's
come on,
completely
man. You should have got it the first time. Second time round. Come on. He should have got it the second time round.
Dude, I just did the big thing that I did at the end of the film, which I won't spoil.
Or it should have had a funny moment where, like, you know, they all finish and he's still firing. He's like, ah, oh, shit. I thought I had it that time.
I do like Mark Strong a lot. I think he really does embody Sinestro.
And he rocks the moustache in this
He
film.
Does. Oh, dude, look, quite
and
frankly,
you know what? There's a very few men that can pull off a moustache like that.
I don't know why they didn't just go with a Sinestro story for this. Yeah. We kind of... Anybody who's watched the cartoons
dude,
and
that's
stuff,
what they're planning for this incredibly darker sequel that they're
the
planning.
The darker, edgier Green Lantern, which would be the Brown Torch.
I don't even have hopes at this point that this darker sequel is actually going to happen. The current box office on this film, Disney, I mean, look, there's a point where Warner Brothers has to sit there and go, yes, we're going to push ahead with the sequel, we're going to push ahead with the sequel, but when the worldwide box office tickets come in, if this film doesn't make budget, at least, I mean, this film isn't even my budget at this point. If it doesn't make budget, what would encourage them to go on, you know? And Warner Brothers are already notoriously tight, you know? Mm. And so you sit there and go, I just don't see it.
Someone translated darker and edgier sequel for me this week, and they said, fuck, what do we do now?
And, you know, once again, we've had this discussion on the show many times, which is not all superhero films need to be darker and edgier.
No.
You know, Captain America proved that. You don't need to be dark and edgy to make a film.
And Lantern shouldn't be.
No, Lantern's not a dark and not a dark and edgy darky character. Edgy, that's the one I was going for. Look, I'm going to start off, and I'm going to say... I actually don't recommend you go see this at the cinema. Now, first of all, I don't recommend you see this in 3D. It's a terrible conversion. It's not Clash of the Titans bad, like, you know, cardboard cutouts, but it's just non-existent. There was actually several moments in this film, especially in the Earthbound scenes, in the live-action scenes, where I took my glasses off and there was no noticeable difference on screen. Some of the stuff on Oa is a little bit more successful because it's all CG created, so they could get a little bit more effective. But realistically, it's not a really astounding conversion in any way, shape, or form. So don't pay the premium on 3D dollars. I'm sorry, Roadshow, for saying that. But I also actually don't recommend you pay cinema dollars for it. I actually said in my review, I actually think that this would make a fun Saturday night DVD/Blu-ray release, particularly Blu-ray, because the OS stuff looks really cool. But I can't justify spending the amount of money they charge for cinema tickets to go see this. It's just not in the same league as some of the other stuff that's out this summer.
I think for what it did well, I wouldn't go that far. But that's just me. I'm just saying I would still advise people to go out there on a Friday night, because a lot of the time with a Friday night movie watch film, we're all going out to see trash anyway. We're going out to see The Unstoppables or The Die Hard 4s or whatever. Like, we're not going out for, you know, sort of drama and stuff like that. You want just a film which is just fun. And this movie... You know, either way, you want an emotion out of a film, and I got more hate than I did love towards this film, but it was a conversational point, and it lasted us for the rest of the night, based on the fact that it was average. So, I don't know, I would still say it's worth going to see it at the cinemas, and I mean, like, it's done all right, man. I mean, it's not great, but it's
what
like...
What is its current box office tag?
Domestic total is $114 million.
And internationally?
$45 million.
Yeah. What it costs to make 200 and what?
200
on the nose.
Yeah, come on, dude. You got to think, man. Once the DVDs come out,
it's scraping it, because you got to add to that odd 40 odd million for marketing.
Marketing, yeah.
So it's got a bit of ways to go,
dude. All they need to do is stick in maybe 3 or 4 deleted scenes and possibly a behind the scenes and release a $45 freaking.
Oh, and those nude photos of Blake Lively that aren't photos of Blake Lively from the internet,
except that it's her face completely and they came from her phone.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that.
So put those on the Blu-ray in high def.
Actually, I would actually recommend seeing the photos of Blake Lively on the internet rather than watch Green Lantern. But, you know, that's...
that's fun for the whole family. For my recommendation, I'm with Josh on this. I think it's fun enough to go and see it at the cinema. It is good popcorn fodder. And maybe I'm forgiving it a bit more because I'm a DC fan, but I think there's enough in there. I've seen some terrible, terrible action films.
And
this is not anywhere in that league.
Yeah, that's fair.
So this has got enough good in it for me to give it a mild recommendation.
Mm. Fair enough. I guess I look at it in the point of view of, if you're a family going to the movies, it's going to cost you... You got to ask yourself this. A family with 2 children, taking into account parking, taking into account snacks, food, everything else, you got to ask yourself this. Is Green Lantern worth $100?
No. I mean, if you're taking the whole family to see it, maybe not. But I get my movies for free. I don't care.
I think, for $100. No, and dude, that's the other thing. I mean, I think, what did Nikki think?
I give you the 12-year-old opinion. The 12-year-old's opinion was, he actually said, It was all right. It wasn't as bad as he thought it would be, but... And actually, funnily enough, he picked these on his own, and I agree with him 100%. He said he didn't mind the CG-created costume. He thought that was all right, but he thought the mask was terrible.
Yeah, no, hated the mask was difficult to deal with.
He hated the soundtrack. He thought the music sucked, and he hated the girl, as he put it. So, Blake Lively.
Yeah, so, exactly. And these are all the same things we have, but, you know, it's still entertaining, and that's the thing. I mean, like, this doesn't go in the bad list of films, so I just...
No, look, it's nowhere near that. And as I say, I would easily recommend it on DVD Blu-ray. Mm. I think for the amount of money that cinema vendors are now charging, I just think that they're pricing themselves out of the price range for this kind of movie.
It's like that. I like that.
Because I look at it this way, and I go, at the cinema right now, if I was going out on a Friday night, and I've got a choice between watching this or Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
Oh, no. Look,
I'm going to see Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Pause down on that one. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's things I like the magazine Film Inc., which actually rates their movies out of a dollar value.
So there used to be Cranky Critic used to do that as well.
Yeah, and how much would you pay for? How much should you pay for it? Like, you know, is it worth it? And the thing is, in Australia, and I know that we do actually pay double what they pay in the States.
Yeah.
And there was a recent article in our Sydney Morning Herald about
that. Well, if you go see
that.
This in 3D at a Grand Union cinema, you're going to pay $23
a ticket. If you buy it online, you add an extra dollar for the booking fee.
Yep.
And then, as David said, if you're taking the family out between parking, dinner, or if you're not taking the family out between parking and a babysitter or whatever, you know, it's an expensive...
Why do you think we have so many sound systems and big TVs?
Absolutely. That's why everybody's going for home cinemas, because it's become completely untenable to take your family out to the movies. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, you think about how much it would cost to rent a film on iTunes with the TV that you bought. Even if you're paying that over 5 years and paying yourself back, every time you spend $3 instead of $100 at the cinema, you tell me whether or not people are going to bother going to your cinemas, and why you're whinging about the fact that people won't go to cinemas.
Yeah.
You're going to charge too much, people aren't going.
And I can vacuum my carpets. The cinemas don't seem to be capable.
You know what? When I get up and leave my couch, I don't have shit everywhere either.
Yeah, I don't leave the stuff I've been eating on the floor for somebody else to pick
That's
up.
That's true. Mm. Although my son does.
Actually, I do sometimes. Sorry, Susan.
Yeah. Sorry, Nicholas. No, disparaging remarks. Okay, let's move on to a bit of entertainment news. We've got Jason Conan Momoa. I do have a...
Oh, I love this.
Look, I have a picture of him. There he is. Cool, right, Conan?
I can't wait till Monday.
All right. We're actually seeing this film on Monday. We'll be able to review it next week. Apparently, a sequel for Conan is in the works, written by Jason Momoa.
He can read?
Apparently.
And write.
I had no idea. So
Well, look, I mean, I can't turn someone down before even seeing what they're capable of.
Shall I read you his quotes?
Go.
I'm loading up his article right now. Basically, he hasn't written the script because they haven't greenlit this yet. He's written the story.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and
Mango, it was sword.
Conan fight.
Here we go.
Exclusive for Crave Online. They say Jason Momoa is writing the Conan sequel. And Crave asked the question, are you signed to do another? And Jason Momoa said, I am. But as long as people go out and watch the first one, you know what I mean. Do you really?
No, please just explain that to us, Jason.
And Crave says, yeah, is there a story you'd like to do for the next movie? And he says, I wrote it. He says, did you really? And Jason Momoa said, yeah. So we're waiting to see if they accept it. I'd like to... Was it written in crayon?
Oh, dude, that's being mean.
No, you would have used a texter.
Sharpie.
It's written on a napkin.
Now it says, is it an original or did you adapt it from something? And Momoa probably at that point said, what's adapt? But, you know, Momoa said, it will mostly be space-based. It's character-adapted. Okay. Because I really want to get into more of the mythical creatures, you know.
So he wants to get into the
I'll be Crave.
Wait, okay, hold on. No, I'm sorry. We've got to stop. As someone that likes my language, I just want to break down that last sentence. It will mostly be... I'm sorry, but this is the exact way it's written. It will mostly be...
Pause.
It's character adapted. Because I really want to get into more of the mythical creatures. Get into?
You know. You forgot the you know.
No. I know. I was getting to that. But... I don't know, because I don't know what that means. Getting into more of the mythical creatures?
It's Conan the XXX porn parody.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is he going to get inside them? Does he want to rip them open? Is this a statement that he wants AC to bring Widget, more of the... That's not a Conan real sentence.
Unicorn. AC Widget in our chat room would like to say, "Ah, oh, he is a cutie."
We want unicorn.
Yeah. We want okay. in unicorn. Now, I don't know. I don't know if she's referring to my son or Jason Momoa, but we'll figure that out. All right. So now he said... Crave Online, Alec, their answer to that was,
Oh, yeah,
whatever you said. Now, he said, we wanted to go there in the first one, but having Clash of the Titans and coming out against that, we wanted to put the budget into some other things. What, like acting coaches? We couldn't get to that level with the visual effects and stuff. I don't want to
give... This is abridged, by the way. It's actually not that bad.
I don't want... Yeah, but I love how it's written. We just got to read it as it's written. I don't care if it's abridged. I love
clearly
the
they've cut out a lot of crap there.
Well, yeah,
I don't know how much to trust the person writing this because he's even fucked up, oh, yeah, because that... It's either got to be oh, comma, yeah... Or, oh, yeah, with like an exclamation mark.
Yeah.
It's just, that's not even a word statement.
I don't want to give anything away, but we already have our Conan. Really, it's about the villain. What that villain is going to extract from Conan. That sounds ominous. And where, as an actor, I want to go with Conan. You know.
I want to go with Conan to movies.
You know, no one's going to know what I want to do better than me. Or the writers, or the directors, or the producers.
And as Crave Online says in response to that, touche.
Look, the last time...
What's touche? What is he toucheing in that sentence?
No one's going to know what I want to do better than me. Touche.
Touche. We'll leave
that's
the...
not a touche.
He's responding on the same level to which it was offered.
At this point, I would like to say that that when you give an actor... full control of a character like that, you end up with films like Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Yeah.
Or Rocky.
No, Rocky's a different case because he created it from scratch. It was his. He's not taking a property and then saying, I know the character
I
better than
everybody.
I think
we all know that Jason Momoa is really Conan in real life.
In Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, when the nuclear guy is born in the middle of the sun...
I will crush Superman.
Why is he? He's created in like a nuclear explosion in the sun, isn't he? Why is he wearing clothes? Like it comes out.
Well, because Lex put the clothes in the box when they jettisoned it off. Did you remember?
Not to be the advocate.
Sewed themselves,
right?
Not to be the advocate of this sort of thing, but shouldn't we be talking about films?
Yes,
we are talking about films. We're talking about Superman 4. Now, I gotta stress at this point, Superman 4 is actually on the GWBL as one of the greatest bad films ever made.
Yeah.
This film is hysterical, and because of exactly those sort of logic problems, it's amazing.
Yeah,
I love Superman 4.
I'm still reeling over that touche comment because to touche, don't you have to have asked a question and have your question rebutted?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that the concept?
You would think, yes.
See, I don't know who's worse here, the person writing or the person doing the actual interview.
The last thing he said was, oh, yeah, so perhaps he's touche that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow, he kept talking. Touche.
HC Widget actually says, I loved him in Stargate. Talking to Callison, he says, I think he does have a good sense of humor, but no idea how much of this, as in this interview, is a joke.
Yeah.
Look, as he ends in the interview with, I want to fucking make a great Conan movie.
What, so you already didn't one?
Yeah, apparently.
Aren't we seeing a Conan movie on Monday? And if that's not a fucking great Conan movie, why are we seeing it?
I want to fucking make a great Conan film.
I want to read this with a Russian accent now. I want to fucking make a great Conan movie.
I want to fucking make a great Conan film. Wouldn't
fucking.
That be, I want to make a great
fucking
Conan
movie.
Now, from a marketing point of view, because he's got a film coming out, wouldn't you have wanted to say, I want to make
another great fucking
Conan movie?
This guy's cut so much stuff out, who knows?
Okay. Dead air, guys.
Sorry.
Right, let's move on. All right, so Jason Momoa wants to write his own sequel to Conan. So we wait with bated breath to find out whether this will actually happen or not. First of all,
we haven't seen the film.
The first Conan has to be a hit.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll let you know next week how that goes. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So we got a new trailer here, from the ridiculous to something that actually looks pretty good. So 50-50. is a film that was inspired by real life events. It's a very personal project to Seth Rogen and his writers and directors and everybody else involved. Apparently they had a friend who actually did get cancer, and they saw the humor in it. Which, let me tell you, from a father who had a child who had cancer, you find the humor in this. You have to. It's just the way it works. We've never heard so much laughing than the cancer ward at the Children's Hospital, because everybody just finds the humor in it, you know? And they've decided to make this film, 50-50, which refers to his chances, you know? This is the second trailer for this, and I'm really digging this. I really want to see this film. So here's 50-50.
You have cancer?
They found it yesterday.
They found it yesterday? Who found it?
My cleaning lady found it in the back of my jeans. Who do you think found it?
You're young. Young people beat cancer all the time. Every celebrity beats cancer. Dr. Dexter, Lance Armstrong, he keeps getting it.
Oh, so you're my shrink? How old are you?
24.
So what are you, like Doogie Howser?
Who?
The teenage doctor.
Does he work here?
I'm moving in.
No, Mom, no.
I'm your mother, Adam.
But exactly.
Don't do it!
I thought you said you liked to do it.
You're gonna look weird.
Come on, let's just do it. What do you use this for?
My body tremors, so... What is that?
Hello?
Hey, it's Adam.
What's going on?
He's probably having a nervous breakdown.
What are your chances?
It said 50-50.
It's not that bad. You were a casino game. You'd have the best odds.
You really think that a girl's gonna go for me just because I have cancer?
For the millionth time, yes!
I have cancer.
I was wrong. Nice it was to meet it you. Was weird. It's yeah, weird like that. No, that's it's not too it, soon. It doesn't sound cool.
50-50.
Nice head. Can I touch it?
You can do more than touch it.
I was wrong.
Looks all right.
Yeah, it looks all right. Yeah. And Richard was just saying
it could go either way.
Oh dear. As Richard was saying during the trailer, he has a thing for Anna Kendrick. So do I. Actually, I think Anna Kendrick is lovely. And it's funny because I hated her. The first time I saw her was actually in Twilight.
Oh, I forgot she was in.
She was one of the friends going, "That my boobs look good in this." And
the first thing I remember in was Up in the Air.
Up in the Air, but that was the turnaround because I saw her in Twilight and thought, "Oh God, you're awful," and then saw her in Up in the Air and thought, "Oh, she's actually a very good actress. She's doing some really good work here." And now she's been showing up in things like Scott Pilgrim and stuff like that. So it's like, you know. Yeah, and she's gorgeous. She's very pretty. Okay, Home 3D is finally getting a standard. Now, is Sean still in our chat room? That looks like he's moved on. Sean Lindsay from 3D Horizon would have been interested with this story. Apparently, the different disparate makers of 3D TVs are finally getting together, and they're standardizing the 3D experience. Now, I have here on screen a picture of a prototype. Ta-da! Of 3D glasses. Nice. As of next year. As of 2013, I think they say. Where is it? It's in the article here somewhere. Anyway, August 2011 was the press release. I think it's next year. Next year's models of TVs. They're going to be trying to standardize this down so that it's the same shutter glasses on all
TVs.
Nice.
Yes.
And then they'll be able to lower the price of shutter glasses because they'll be able to be the third-party manufacturers, et cetera, et cetera. And 3D TVs might actually then be a viable option. So I think that's really wonderful news. But sucks for all you people who already bought 3D TVs.
Yeah, but this is anything with any early adopter. You take a chance.
Absolutely. Really. It's, what is it? You're either on the leading edge or the bleeding edge.
That's right.
And so in this case, you're bleeding out. I thought this was actually kind of a fun little story. This was actually sent to the Geek Show, but I thought this was more appropriate to us. So I kept it in here, which is a cinema called Films on Fridges. And basically it is an outdoor cinema made completely out of fridge doors. All the benches are fridge doors. All the walls are fridge doors. I think the screen is even a fridge door. Basically, it is in Britain, and it's what they call a pop-up cinema, where basically they've just created an outdoor cinema. It's inspired by the fact that there was actually the area where it was a dumping ground for old fridges. And so there were all these old fridges and so where they cleaned all that up. And they thought, well, you know what? We've got all these old fridges. We've got fridge doors. And it's only open for a limited time. It's just basically to celebrate the fact that this area has all been cleaned up. And it was inspired by what they call Fridge Mountain, 20 feet high pile of discarded fridges.
Nice.
And so they cleaned it up and it's been removed. And now they've got Fridge Cinema, which I thought was very cute. So there you go. Good use of public spaces, H.G. Widget.
Damn right.
Damn straight. I don't know what sort of films they're showing there, but it could be fun.
Batman and Robin.
On the fridges.
Batman and Robin, so you can have all those.
Feel freeze coming on.
Freeze coming,
That's both lame.
So lame. All right, we've waited long enough.
Yes.
Yes.
We've waited long enough. Are you ready for Harold and Kumar?
Very ready.
Definitely.
This is the new trailer for, and this came out this week. It's very hot off the presses, basically. It came out, no, I didn't even know they were making this movie. For a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas.
I shot Santa Claus in the face. He's real, and I shot him in the face.
What the?
Do you want to see my room?
Ah, married. He's single, though.
Hi, Kumar.
Sorry, I don't date black guys.
What?
What are you doing?
What?
My daughter's in there!
What?
Neil Patrick Harris. Welcome to heaven. I'm Jesus.
Jesus.
Christ. I practically run this place.
Oh, for reals?
I mean, my dad owns it, but I'm kind
of
number one.
You're one of those.
Watch out!
Who are those guys?
I think I was starting to trip out a little bit.
Those kids put something in here.
Dude, we're claymated.
Awesome! Oh my god! This is like that scene from A Christmas Story. How did this happen?
Oh, is it? Is it like the scene from Christmas Story?
I'm sorry, dude.
Oh!
Just walk it off.
I don't know. Hasn't the whole 3D thing jumped the shark by now?
You don't understand.
It makes Avatar look avatarded. It's gonna be amazing.
Who are you looking at?
You a Merry Christmas.
I hope you're still alive.
What are you talking about?
We saw you get shot.
In that whorehouse?
In Texas.
You branded a prostitute.
Remember?
You have to be more specific.
A very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. In 3D.
Why don't you take your sweater off? For a massage. Just a couple girlfriends.
Okay. Get off of me! Oh, I thought you were gay.
I am gay. Gay for that.
I give the munchies.
I'm totally seeing that film.
That's so good.
Parody on 3D, oh, kids getting stoned. Oh my god.
Is nothing safe. Back, baby.
Is nothing safe. Dude, this is the reason I love the original films, yes. Because it was just, it was everything that was those crappy teen films that we had had so many times before, but just taking it to the Archer level of just extremes above extremes. It's like they aim for the line and then trample over it.
And there are films that are pointlessly about nothing.
Absolutely.
It's just their adventure doing nothing.
Well, look, I mean, like, somebody once in an article said that they're like this generation's Cheech and Chong, and I'm totally down with that. Yeah. That's so true. Like, but in the best way of the sense, it's like they make movies that are stupid and offensive, but they make them that way because that's just funny.
Yeah.
If you do it right, it's just funny.
Yeah.
And like, no one's going to take that film seriously, but watching that kid while out in the front seat at the end of that shot in the last bit of the trailer, totally down.
Oh, I love the bit where it's Jesus and he's got my dad. I practically run this place. I mean, it's my dad's better. It's like, oh, you're one of those guys.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
All right. So let's regain our equilibrium here and say that our wish came true. According to latest articles, the new Riddick film.
Really? Olivia Wilde's coming?
Oh, wait a minute. Olivia Wilde?
Oh, he left it on the board.
Just for you. All right. Not Olivia Wilde. The new Riddick film, if you remember our discussion earlier, is now being cast. So it is going ahead, and it is a direct sequel to Pitch Black.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I wanted to hear.
So there you go. So that's the latest on Riddick. Sony this week, so confident about The Amazing Spider-Man, so confident that they've already set the release date for the sequel.
No, that's just because Sony is pedantic about release dates.
No,
the
analysis on this, I heard a really wonderful analysis on this the other day, was saying that Sony is so paranoid about losing the rights to Spider-Man because, let's face it, if they don't make a film, it goes back to Marvel, right? They're so paranoid, they're setting up these films like in a row so that they never lose that right. So as soon as Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man is finished, they'll roll straight into production of another one, even if they're just developing script, because they don't want to lose those rights. Because Marvel at the moment wants it all back, and you know they want it all back. Fox and everybody who are holding rights on these things are desperately trying to keep films moving because they're all going to start losing their rights.
Does that mean we're going to see another Daredevil and Elektra film?
Daredevil's already been talked about.
That is true, actually.
Yeah, Daredevil and Fantastic Four have been talked about.
It sucks, too, because, I mean, like, I'm never going to get the film that I want, which is my Daredevil and Deadpool film.
No, you know? And you'll never get... actually, you might, because Daredevil and Deadpool are both owned by Fox.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah. They're both licensed to Fox.
You're listening to Fox?
The one that we'll never get, though, is we'll never get Fantastic Four run by Marvel so that we can get Reed Richards into the Marvel Universe.
Exactly.
Because Reed Richards should be working alongside the Avengers.
Yeah.
So, and it's really... It saddens me that we'll never actually have the Fantastic Four in the proper environment.
Maybe I'll just have a new character in the Avengers called Weed Richards or something.
Weed Richards. And last in our news is another trailer. Now, what do you guys know about the film The Sitter?
Hmm. Not much.
All right. This is the new Jonah Hill film.
Right. Oh, yeah.
It basically looks like this is before he lost the weight, because now he's very thin because he's losing weight for 21 Jump Street. So he's still the Jonah Hill that we know, you know. This is basically, it looks to me like a remake of Adventures in Babysitting, but really raw. Not like Adventures in Babysitting. This is not family friendly in any way, shape, or form. The Red Band trailer came out this week. Now, wow, this is wrong in just about every way that you could. Wrong in the good ways. Don't get me wrong. But when you look at this, you go, wow, this is not how you're supposed to do kid films with children in them. Kind of like the Harold and Kumar thing. In fact, if you go to follow our show notes, follow the link. There's actually a very lengthy intro to this trailer, which is Jonah Hill talking to the kids who are in the film. And even that is wrong in every way. I didn't do that for the show. We're just doing the trailer. But so this is the Red Band trailer for The Sitter. See what you think of this. By the way, we carry an explicit tag. I have mentioned that, right? Okay.
What's up?
My mom was so right. Nice guys really do eat the best pussy.
Not really sure how to interpret that.
Thank you so much for going down on me.
You're really good at getting downed on.
Have you started looking for a job yet?
Sorry.
What about babysitting?
Babysitting sucks. Adult men don't babysit things.
You're wonderful with children. Noah.
Mrs. Padula.
So good to see you.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Get over. Bring it in for a hug, babe. Aww. What are we doing?
This is Slater, Blythe, and Rodrigo.
My real babysitter, Nancy. She does what I want her to do.
I'm not a real babysitter. I'm more of a sit on the couch.
What's up, you little tampon?
Do whatever I say or I'll kill you type of babysitter. Ah! You sprayed perfume in my mouth.
I hate you.
I fucking hate you, too. I'll destroy you. Ah! Motherfucker!
I'm at a party. Do you want to come?
I probably shouldn't.
I'll give you what you asked for. My vagina.
Yeah, maybe I could work something out.
We at the cabron.
Don't you fuck with me, Rodrigo.
Got some big ass balls, man.
Can't buy underwear. Balls don't fit. I've been stuck babysitting these three kids.
I know him. He's a friend. That looks good. What is that?
I'm being chased by two insane drug dealers. I came for my motherfucking keys to my motherfucking minivan, and that's what's up.
No, it's different.
Have you ever been emotionally butt-fucked by a friend?
I can't say that I have, no. This guy has. No, just kidding.
You know this ain't no place for no kids.
My name's Noah J. Bird.
Noah J. Bird?
Ca-caw!
Oh, you like to fly.
What's your name, baby?
They call me Soul Baby.
Soul Baby?
Yeah.
Keep it in control, baby. Tears, no fears, man.
Oh, is that right?
Respect it, don't neglect it.
All right, my brother.
Treat it, don't beat it,
all right,
man.
Baby. You're a badass motherfucker.
All right.
You know what? I'll go see that.
Yeah.
I think it'll make a good
I'm not usually
feature.
A Jonah Hill fan, but that looks like it has enough around him to keep me interested.
Yeah. And I love Politically Incorrect. So.
Oh, dude. And the very concept of dragging kids through that. Brilliant.
It'll make a great double feature with Harold and Kumar, I think.
I think so, yes.
I think that's my Christmas watching lined up right there.
All right, let's. Before I go any quick, look. Before we go into our list of five, I'm really curious.
Mm. Why are you curious?
What then? Is?
I'm bi curious.
What is this that you have sitting on?
Oh,
the
sorry. Yeah,
these have been sitting here for a week. What?
Yeah, look. Just a quick plug, really, and this is sort of a plug slash gift giving exercise. I'm going to hand you both one of these. It's a Korean chocolate pie with marshmallow. And it's because next week, starting from mid this week, in fact, the Korean Film Festival in Australia kicks off in Sydney and Melbourne.
Right.
It's the second year they run it. This is the first year they run it in Melbourne. It's the only film festival of its kind in Australia that runs Korean film exclusively. Mm. So if you're into that sort of thing, it's great. We've got some really great guests this year. There's also, they're debuting films like The Unjust and The Man from Nowhere, as well as doing a bit of a retrospective on a few films, including Park Chan-wook's JSA.
Mm. Justice Society of America?
Justice Society of America. Joint Security Area,
oh, okay.
It stands for. And also Park Chan-wook's brand new short film, which won the Golden Bear at the Berlin Film Festival this year. And he shot it all on an iPhone. Well, he actually shot it on 6 iPhone 4s with huge lenses on it. So it's not something we can really replicate here. But
we might be able to get similar, though, because my wife during the break actually said, have you seen this? And there's an ad in the latest Sydney Morning Herald for an iPhone lens, which can basically snap on and give you a lens on your iPhone for $40-something.
I might have to get one of those. But yeah, look, it's going to be a thing. It runs from middle of this week until the weekend, and it moves on until to Melbourne a few weeks after that. Next week, if you're in Sydney, if you're coming to Sydney next week on Saturday the 27th of August, I will be involved in a panel down there as well on Korean film in Australia, representing The Real Bits.
So, cool.
Nice.
Excellent.
Nice.
All right. So, and just so our people in our chat room see, look.
That's me.
Mm, oh, yeah. Yummy. That's me. So that explains that. Well, who cares about you? I just want the chocolate. So basically, it's a Korean wagon wheel, is what you're saying.
It looks like a shorter, rounder Korean wagon wheel.
Cool. I'll have it with a cup of tea.
It's more efficient.
More efficient,
more efficient wagon wheel.
The more efficient wagon wheel.
We all know wagon wheels are too big. Come on, chat room, back me up on this. They're way too big.
They've gotten smaller.
They have gotten smaller. I remember when wagon wheels used to be much bigger.
Yeah, dude, it was just impractical. By the time you got around to the other side, your whole hand's covered in chocolate. That thing there's the right size.
Ah, so you have to leave the wrapper
right
when you have to pull the wrapper.
That's right.
That's a completely wrong show for this discussion. Mm. All right, let's move on to our list of five. Thank you for that chocolate, and thank you for shamelessly plugging yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was plugging the festival, but I thought I'd plug myself while I was there.
Too. Why not? You plugged yourself? All right, while we're at it,
That's a different chat entirely.
All right. This week, our list of five inspired by Green Lantern, five movies with a color in the title. Okay. Let's get this ball rolling. I actually quite like my list, and I'm going to start first. And I'm going to say my list number five: Betty Blue, 1986 nice. Film by Jean-Jacques Benet, or also known as 37.2 Degrees in the Morning. 37.2, yeah, 37.2, I think.
Possibly,
something like,
we'll
something
have to
like
look
it.
That
one of those. Anyway, but Betty Blue, look for it. It's a film that basically delves into the insanity of this character, who she just slowly moves into insanity, and how this guy has to deal with the relationship that he has with this wild child. And it is a superb film and well worth having a look at. Your number five
is Purple Rain.
All right. Purple, it was actually on Rain. My short list at one point.
Purple Rain.
Great nude scene from Apollonia.
Oh, absolutely. Sorry, look,
my mind always turns to sex.
It's not the best of... look, I mean, it's not... The problem with Purple Rain is everyone talks about how bad it is, but it's actually... It's not bad, but it's just not good enough to be great. And
I actually quite like Purple
And it's not
Rain.
Bad enough to be like funny bad, but the sequel, Graffiti Bridge, is bad enough to be hilarious. Yeah. Mm. So Purple Rain, great soundtrack, slightly flawed movie.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Mm. No, I quite like Purple Rain. Not a masterpiece in any way, but it was good music, though. Great
and
music.
It sort of mirrors what Prince sort of had. It very much mirrors his own career. Him trying to break through from underground to
And
what
Apollonia
he is now.
Is gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely.
No doubt.
Not what he is now, though.
You not mean, what he's now. What, no, not what he was. What he was back ago. At the height of his career.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Cool.
Not the sort of Christian Bible bashing guy that he is now.
Your number five, Josh.
My number five is Men in Black.
All yeah, right.
I don't think any more explanation than that. It's men. They're in black, and they fight for and against aliens.
And we just got announcements that Men in Black 3 is in production.
You know what? I'm down. Yeah. I don't care. I'll do it. I love that storyline. I love the cast. I'm so excited.
The good guys dress in black. Remember that, in case you ever come face to face and make contact.
I actually wasn't overly impressed with the sequel, but I love the first one. Yeah. My number four is The Big Red One. Samuel Fuller.
Which film did you want?
The 1980 Samuel Fuller World War II film basically gave birth to the whole notion that, you know, World War II wasn't actually that nice a war, and it was actually pretty dark, and really paved the way for the modern war film that we know today. Really, really good film. And if you haven't had a chance to see it, it is on DVD. Go grab it and have a look at it. It's dark. It's hard. It's a hard watch sometimes. But Samuel Fuller really, he was a vet of World War II, and he really wanted to tell an honest look at World War II rather than the flag-waving, yeah, we're the Americans going into war. This was kind of a much... And the Big Red One, for those who don't know, is the name of his company. That's the... what is it? The infantry division. They had a red one on their arm. So, all right, you're number four.
Keeping with the purple theme, The Purple Rose of Cairo.
Great film.
Woody Allen film.
Love that film.
Yeah, brilliant film. And if you love cinema, then you should love The Purple Rose of Cairo.
Yeah, for those who don't know what it's about, it's basically about a guy who goes into...
He
steps out of a movie screen.
Movie called The Purple Rose of Cairo.
That's right.
And yeah, no, it's... And the reaction of the world around it is quite hilarious as well. And it's probably Woody Allen at his kind of... semi-serious finest.
It was the time that was made was at his transition point. That was where he was moving from comedy to drama, and it's kind of like a mix of the two. It's a really great film. Really is terrific stuff. Your number four.
My number four is The Green Mile. Definitely not my favorite of Darabont's film, you know, the Stephen
it's
King
much higher
thing.
On my list. So.
I mean, I still really love this film for what it is, and I think acting-wise, it was a really strong film, and it's got some great moments. Like I said, not my favorite, but it's on my list either way.
I'll come back to that, because it's actually higher on my list. So.
Cool.
My number three. My number three is Luc Besson's 1988 film, The Big Blue.
Save that one.
We'll save it then. Okay, your number three.
Is Pretty in Pink.
Was on my short list.
Look, I put this on part for two reasons. One, I always include one for Susan, the lovely Susan. But also, she introduced me to this film because I love John Hughes films, but for some reason, Pretty in Pink was one that just passed me by. And I was so glad that I discovered it in the last couple of years, and I've watched it about four or five times in the last few years now.
Look, it's formulaic. It is definitely of Hughes's production, not a direction, because he wrote it and produced it. Howard Deutsch directed it.
That's correct.
And it's a really good film, though. It's a really fun film.
And it's got, you know, John Cryer years before he did Two and a Half Men, back when he was just Ducky.
Ducky.
who's such an annoying character, but you can't help but love him.
He was the poor man. He was the poor man's Matthew Broderick.
If absolutely,
you couldn't get Matthew Broderick. You got John Cryer.
And the thing is, I mean, we've all been there with Ducky, and the thing about the characters in these either John Hughes produced or directed films is they're just so relatable because they're so based. The emotions are so based, and it's just such a kitsch film by today's standard. It's got Annie Potts in it as well in a great role, but. And it's been remade so many times.
Well, essentially, Hughes remade it several times himself. I mean, you could actually say Some Kind of Wonderful, Pretty in Pink,
Some Kind of Wonderful,
16 Candles.
Virtual,
these are all very much
virtual remakes, analog remakes.
Clones of each other.
Yeah.
But good film. Josh, your number three.
My number three is Red Dawn. It's a shit film.
It was on my short list, man.
Hey, dude, it's a shit film, and I don't try and pretend it's not. It's too long. It's almost in some sort of a way like an American... it's like everything that's wrong with that kind of a concept, in my opinion. It's like it's taken to the nth degree, and it's got these people that are a little bit too obsessed. Like everyone on that project is a little bit too weird for my liking, but I always have fun watching it because some of it just gets so ridiculous by about halfway mark.
I actually loved Red Dawn. I saw it in the cinemas in the 80s. It was actually when I was in high school Red Dawn came out. It was such a product of its era.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. It's
absolutely
like,
product of its era.
It's so, oh, God.
Do you know what? It screams we're the Reagan era.
Oh, dude, exactly. That was actually where I was going with that. I was about to say, yeah, look, it's so Reagan-esque in its concept, but it was just, it's, you know, oh, God, I just expect people like Charlton Heston to walk in at some stage. It's just like gun-toting maniacs are us in one film. But you know what? It's a fucking hilarious romp. And also, as a kid growing up with that film, there was a small part of you that sort of fantasized about running off into the bush and fighting an unknown enemy.
Mm. I am curious to see this remake that has apparently been made and for some reason hasn't been released yet. It's been
this one has Charlton Heston? Mm.
No. Still no Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston's is he still alive?
No, he died.
He died finally, didn't he? Yeah. He kicked around for a long time.
Did he die? Did somebody pull a gun out of his cold dead hand?
Cold dead hand.
Oh, come on.
Okay, that was pretty good. All right, I will say that Red Dawn is actually on my honorary mentions. It was almost on the list, so I agree with you 100%. Mm. I loved it. All right, my number two is the Steven Spielberg 1985 film The Color Purple, which was actually number one for a great deal of time until last night. It was the first film I actually thought of for this list. As soon as we said Color Purple. I love this film. This was the first film. This was the first grown-up film from Steven Spielberg. It was like this was the film where he said, okay, I'm going to do a drama. Screw you, Academy. You won't ever give me an Academy Award. Let's make this. And was still snubbed. So a terrific film.
And probably the only thing you can stand watching Oprah Winfrey in.
She was fantastic in it, though. And here's a film that got 11 Academy Award nominations.
Didn't win a single one.
Didn't win a single one. But out of those 11, Spielberg wasn't even nominated. So he was.
And I think that was indicative that he wasn't being taken seriously as a filmmaker.
And that was the year that I will always applaud him, because if you actually go back and watch the Academy Award broadcast for that year, Spielberg is in the front row because he's obviously a director of caliber enough to be in the front row. And he's wearing a jeans jacket and jeans because he knew he wasn't getting up. You know? He just basically turned up in his casuals. And I just thought that was fabulous. So yeah, Color Purple. Highly recommended viewing. It was the start of many things. You don't have A Color Purple, you wouldn't have Schindler's List, you wouldn't have Empire of the Sun, you wouldn't have Private Ryan. Simple as that. So, your number two, Richard.
We've spoken about this director in the past and we disagree on him, but I've included Blue Velvet as my number two. David Lynch.
I like Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet. I've never seen Blue Velvet, so I won't.
That's from the era of Lynch where I was still on board.
And you know what? It's weird that I include this film on my list, because when I first saw it, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I thought it was misogynistic and ugly. And that did all the things that I love about it now. Because it is such a... It is Lynch. It is probably the height of his craft, I think.
I agree. I think it's actually probably my favorite Lynch film. So, highly, highly recommended for that. If you are at all... If you are one of those sort of people who sits there and goes, I hate David Lynch, that's the film to watch. Because that's why he's got the reputation that he's got today.
All of his sort of metaphoric, sort of surrealist imagery is in there in the first 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
So you get the point. And then he tells this very brutal story throughout it. But
the film is basically a detective film.
It's a detective film. Yeah. And it's kind of, you know, there's elements of what became, I guess, Twin Peaks as well. Those kind of things in there as well.
But you can really see Twin Peaks in there.
Really. Including the cast, of course. Excellent film.
Good stuff. So. Your number two, Josh.
The Big Blue.
Big Blue. There you go. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, no. It's one of those films. It's really well shot. It's really well organized.
Beautiful.
It's just glorious, man. And as somebody that's very close to the whole water aspect and, you know, having done the diving and things like this, it's like... I get lost in that film.
It was I think it was the film that really introduced Jean Reno to me. I don't think I'd really paid much attention to anything Jean Reno had done until that point. And I fell in love with the man, and I will watch him in anything. I can watch Jean Reno do anything.
Yep.
And it is one of those films where you sit there and you go, and Luc Besson went on to make things like Atlantis and stuff like that. And you go, you can see that he has an absolute fascination with the ocean and with water, and his photography of it is magnificent.
He was the James Cameron of his day.
Kind of, yeah. In many ways, I wish Luc Besson, although he said he's not directing any more films, he says he's basically retiring from directing, he's just going to produce, but I would like to see him direct more films like this. This is really where he was most comfortable, and I'd love to see him do more. I agree with you, Josh. It's a fantastic film. It only didn't get higher on my list because The Color Purple was there and my number one. So.
I can guarantee, by the way, that I have a very different number one to any of you guys.
You can see my list from where you're sitting.
I took a film off my list, an obvious film off my list.
Oh, it wasn't this film.
Because I just assumed that you would have it on your list, and you haven't had it up until now.
Oh, wow.
So I put it into my honor honorary mentions, and it's kind of weird that none of us have come up with this film now. So.
No, okay.
All right, so my
number... Well, dude, it's obviously not on our list now, so what?
Oh, no, well, let's get through the list.
All right, my number one
is The Green Mile.
Nice.
It wasn't actually on my list. Mm. It was in the honorary mentions until last night. I rewatched The Green Mile. Well, I said I'd come back to this from the one we've been watching. I rewatched it last night on Blu-ray.
Mm.
And... absolutely loved it. I sat there watching it, and I remember watching it the first time I watched it. I went, this is an okay film. It's not as solid as The Shawshank Redemption. Mm-hmm. Shawshank Redemption is by far the better of the two films.
Oh, yeah, right.
But in watching it again last night, I put it on, and my wife and son were kind of mulling around doing other things and so forth. But with it, by about the half an hour mark, they were getting interested in what was going on screen. By the hour mark, let's remember the Green Mile is almost three hours long. Mm. By the hour mark, they're actually stopped doing everything that they're doing, and they're just watching the screen because it's at the hour mark, almost exactly at the hour mark, that the supernatural aspect of the film takes place. And you sit there and go, this is not the film I thought it was going to be. And at that point, they became intrigued by it. And we got to a point where I said, Nicholas, it's time for your bed. He goes, I want to see what happens. You know, so it's like, and it is, it's a really amazing film. And I think if anybody who is kind of iffy on it, in its original release, go back and have another look at it because it really is a very powerful film. It's actually a very powerful film in its emotion. The last, in particular, when you kind of get to the moral of the film, you kind of go, wow, that is actually really sad.
It's one of Stephen King's best of those types of stories as well. Yeah. And I remember reading it when it came out in, I don't know if you remember this, it came out as short novellas, which they came out once a month, and you had to buy it, and to get the whole story you had to collect it over 6 months, and I thought that was so neat.
This is kind of like what he's done with Dark Tower
I thought that this was such a neat concept at the time. I thought, okay, yeah, well, I'll go out and do that, and then by the time you got to the end of the story, it was so cathartic, and then to get that out of the film as well,
and it's like,
it was such an amazing
achievement. And it's like when it first came out, when Green Mile came out in the cinema, it was kind of derided by the critics, and the audiences stayed away in droves. For a film coming after The Shawshank...
Which is, you know, the sort of thing that happens to everything Frank Darabont does.
Yeah, kind of. And we didn't bring it up in the show, but Frank Darabont, we found out more about Walking Dead. He got fired. He didn't quit. He actually got fired.
This is why I'm saying, this is why I'm terrified of where they're going to go with it. Because it's like, I said to you at the end of the last series, I was like, this isn't going to work unless they pull it tight very quick, and it didn't. It looks like that's where they're headed.
So Frank Darabont, and then after this, he did The Majestic, which was also bombed and was
also long
and slaughtered by the critics as well. And I really liked The Majestic as well. I thought The Majestic was actually, I saw it on video when it came out, and I went, what did people exactly hate about this? You know,
I felt the same about The Mist. I
love The Mist. Yeah, I love The Mist. So anyway, I would say to you, if you haven't seen Green Mile in a while, go back, put aside the 3 hours, sit down and watch it. And let me just tell you right now, it looks so good on Blu-ray.
Nice.
It is so beautiful, so crisp.
I might have to pick it up.
Yeah, it just looks fantastic. Well worth having a look at. All right, so that's my number one. All right, and it's purely because it's really fresh in my mind.
By the way, before you say it, I just want to say I'm really glad to see this as high on your list, because I think this film is criminally underrated.
Absolutely.
And I was really distraught when I sat in a room of about 25 people and watched this film for the first time on a very big TV and just got up and I was like, that was fantastic. Mm. And everyone in the room was like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Kill the suspense. Tell me what it is.
And I should say, actually, before we say what it is, it came out in the same year as a movie you mentioned, Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
Thematically similar.
I know the film you're talking about.
And it got overly praised, and this film didn't. The Thin Red Line.
It's in my honorary mentions.
Terrence Malick's third film.
I want to say third.
It's his third film. Yes.
Badlands, Heaven's Gate, Thin Red Line.
Thin Red Line. That's right. Terrence Malick's third film after a 20-year absence. So this is his comeback film, and it is flawlessly magnificent. It is.
Dude, it's just so pretty.
It's pretty to look at.
All of his films are pretty.
It's really pretty, but it does that thing that Terrence Malick does really well. It doesn't concentrate on one character. It sort of drifts around and.
It's such a dream.
And I'm going to make a confession. I hated Saving Private Ryan when I saw it in the cinema. Absolutely. I like it now. It's grown on me.
Okay, that's all right. You've saved yourself.
I've saved myself that. But I hated it because I thought it was that kind of real visceral, yay, America hit you over the head shit that I'd seen so many times before. And I thought that it just didn't appeal to me at the time. And I actually found bits of it laughable. Then I saw this not too long afterwards, because I think they delayed it here. But I saw it not too long afterwards. and just found it so beautiful and so moving and so compelling in that way that Malick does, that just draws you in with his visuals. So
I'm actually going to say to you that I'm not entirely surprised about your feelings on Saving Private Ryan, because actually I didn't like it the first time I saw it either, and I didn't dislike it. I just thought, what's the big deal? Because everybody was talking about it.
Well, that was probably more of a thing, yeah.
And the interesting thing is, the more I watch Private Ryan, I own it and I've seen it many times. The thing that I find fascinating about Private Ryan is I think that it has it basically blows its wad too early.
No, exactly.
It has this amazing 25-minute sequence of the storming of Normandy, and then it doesn't know what to do for about half an hour. And then the last half of the film kind of comes back again.
Yeah.
But there's this kind of mishmash in the middle where you go, no idea.
And to me, I kind of got that, because it was almost like, to me, it felt like after such a powerful hit in the first section of that thing, it's almost like the people involved didn't know where to go from there. Like, they had a direction, but it's like it's trying to find something to fight for. Because when everybody hit that beachfront, they knew that they were going to run into those guns until they got to the other side of it. And it was like, that was the goal. That was what they were going
to
do.
I think it's pretty much what the film is trying to say as well. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that we got a situation with Ryan where it's like, you have this amazing sequence. And let's not beat around the bush. That opening 25 minutes is a directorial, editorial, and cinematography tour de force.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it is just amazing.
Everyone in the world, when that scene ends and you've got the panning shot across the thing, you're like,
and the use of Foley in that, it's just an amazing sequence. And you're right, it just drifts for about half an hour after that. And once again, thematically, it's probably exactly what they were going for, you know? But the problem
is, I get it. I get why you guys would think that. I mean, I went in the right headspace at the right time. I had no idea what was coming because I wasn't that old.
And once they get
time.
Their mission, once they actually start going on some of the altercations with the German soldiers, it actually does pick up again.
There's
this patch in the middle.
Oh, and there's some really great scenes in there with just the characters. I know there's one scene where they're all hiding out in a warehouse or something, or not a warehouse, like a broken down building, and they're all trying to get to sleep, and it's a nice character moment. There's bits of that, and I appreciate that more when I go and see it again. And it's kind of weird sort of comparing it to Thin Red Line, which is a movie which intentionally drifts.
And they're very different films. Very
different films. But they came out around the same time, so I couldn't help but compare it, and I just fell in love with it instantly.
People are going to hate me for this, but it's the more intelligent version of Saving Private Ryan. It's like, it goes deeper into every aspect of itself. It's like, it goes deeper into the psyche of the characters.
But that's what
Malick
does.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm saying, I understand why the other one is more well accepted.
It's
nice to meet someone that actually does hold that high in favor.
I'm not
really
as big a Malick fan as either of you. For me, I find Malick incredibly masturbatory.
And you know what? And we can probably both understand that.
Yeah, and
I think I said this when I was talking about
it's a wank, but it's a
beautiful
wank.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I find
Malick a little bit masturbatory, but there is no denying that his films are stunningly beautiful to look at. This is what he does, you know. And I count Badlands, his first film, as one of my favorite films of all time. I think Badlands is a sensational film. Thin Red Line I really enjoyed. But if I had to put Private Ryan up next to Thin Red Line, I actually take Private Ryan over because Spielberg is more, I'm more in touch with Spielberg's style than I am with Malick's style.
No, and I get that. But I mean, it's kind of unfair comparing them. But look,
absolutely.
I inevitably did it because of the release.
All right, we got to move on. Josh, what's your number one?
My number one is Black Dynamite.
Oh, a
criminally underrated
God.
Film that has incredible acting, like Oscar-worthy acting, amazing direction. It's just an absolute tour de force. No, it's fantastic, dude. It's just it's so aware of how much of a piss take it's taking out of itself. It's really nice to see a group of black people take this concept that was so stupid at its time. Like, blaxploitation films were made by people that made them all look like idiots.
But hadn't we already kind of done it with I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker?
No, man, not like that. Because it's like, for me, Black Dynamite works because, I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker is a little bit it's too straightforwardly a joke, whereas Black Dynamite plays itself straight, but just completely fucks with everything.
The real junkies are right there with you. They love this film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and look, it's the reasons. It's things like when he gives his awesome speech, he stands up on top of the desk and the camera actually has to move up to get to him. Yeah. And then as he's talking, you see the boom mic land in his afro, to which he looks up at and continues the speech. Things like that. Things like where he has a fight with a dude and they actually cut scenes out of the fight. So he'll start punching and then it'll cut and he's kicking someone instead. And it's like, stuff like that is good because it's a laugh at that sort of stuff. But then you have the film's jokes as well, where it's things like he runs into a room, starts fighting a dude, and then this fucking boomerang comes out of nowhere through the window and cuts the dude's arm off, and his response is, "Ha, I threw that shit before I came in the room." And you're just like, oh, that's so good. Yeah, I've watched that movie so many times, and if you haven't, please go out and get it, because it's like, it slid out, and it hit the internet harder than I think it did cinemas or video. And it's like, if you go out and find it and watch it, it's truly worth the money or the time that you'll put into getting it.
Very cool. All right, I've got a couple of honorary mentions I'm going to throw out here. And the first one I'm going to mention in my honorary mentions, Josh, is a film that I was sure would be on your list, which is why I didn't put it on mine. Black Swan.
Mm. You know, I thought about it, man, but it's just too close. And I've done a few cliche lists lately. I will admit, possibly because of time spent, you know, or not spent organizing my lists. And I was like, that's too obvious. I knew.
Fair enough. Yeah. I also got the Blues Brothers. I've got Red Dawn on there. Blue Thunder. The helicopter film, which I really enjoy.
I almost
enjoy.
Put Clockwork Orange. That Clockwork was another Orange, one of mine.
Thin Red Line was on my honorary mentions. Reds, the Jack Nicholson film from 1980 about communism. Hunt for Red October, Crimson Tide was Hunt for Red October, my lovely wife Katie. Crimson Tide, The Crimson Rivers, the French film with Jean Reno, and White Heat.
I love that film.
Yeah, me too. And White Heat, the classic gangster film with James Cagney, which is a just brilliant film. And there was many more, but I actually
cut
it down.
Remember the name of that film. Dude,
and I believe you've got 900 million on
your I'll see if I can do this in 10 seconds. Blues Brothers, Purple, A Color Purple, Red Dog, Jackie Brown, Yellow Submarine, The Red Shoes, Soylent Green, Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Clockwork Orange, Black Swan, The Green Mile, Men in Black, The Lavender Hill Mob, this is when I got creative, Moulin Rouge, Blue Valentine, Goldeneye, Ginger Snaps, and The Three Colors Trilogy, Blue, Red, and White.
I had those on the list. I had a whole list of them. I cut them all back for the show.
I could have done a whole purple themed one. I was going to do Purple Rain, Purple Rose of Cairo, The Color Purple.
I would have actually really, really loved that if you hadn't done that.
I couldn't think of two other purple films.
Nice.
All right. The closest I came was Lavender Hill Mob.
Okay. All right. So remember, the only ones that get counted towards things like vaulting lists and so forth are the five. That's the ones that matter. All right. We're going to move ourselves out of here. It's been a very long day. We need to move on.
Yes.
Before we go on and do anything else, though, I just want to play one quick little trailer clip. This was brought to my attention by Richard just before the show. This is really, really short. This is a little teaser that was thrown out for the new Puss in Boots movie. And it just made us laugh. We thought it was very funny. And it's very, very short. So here you go. This was just released literally hot on the heels this morning, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
So here's Puss in Boots.
You want pants that are comfortable. You want pants that make you look good. That's what you want. No pants at all. Introducing Puss in Boots No Pants Pants. Built to keep you well ventilated. Built to keep you comfortable because they aren't there. All that I need are the boots. Puss in Boots No Pants Pants. Because he's one bad kitty. Meow.
How cute is that?
All that I need
if by cute
is no pants at all.
If you mean by cute, you mean shit. That movie is going to be terrible.
But the advertising campaign's great.
That movie is going to be terrible.
You are saying that because you are bound by your pants.
I am saying that because that looks like the team that put together 2 and 3 out of Shrek.
Oh, I like 2.
Shrek 1 is awesome. Shrek 4 was surprisingly good.
I like 2. I actually like 2.
2 was all right.
3 was
but
awful.
No, but 2's well, two jokes are visual in everything I'm seeing in this Puss in Boots thing. This is all the retarded, rejected jokes that they've thrown into one film. But you know I hate comedy, so I'm not one to talk.
Yes, you don't like laughing. You're a dark soul, Josh.
I am a dark soul, and I am aware of that.
agree or disagree with anything we have to say on this show, send your feedback to feedback at... feedback. Feedback at
Except
film,
you, Mike. You know.
Mike.
I'm on you.
Mike, I'm on your side, dude.
That's fine, man. This war is on.
I'm neutral. I'm sitting here in the center.
Agree or disagree with us.
Switzerland.
Or if you just have something to say or you want to get involved in this war, I don't care. Send your email to feedback@filmactually.com.
Please don't do anything really bad, man. No, I don't want to get any email hacks or something. You know I'm just playing.
No, we're just playing around. I love you, man. Drop us a voicemail at 02-801-13167 or use our Skype ID, GeekActually. Merchandise, fan pages, Twitter accounts, Google Pluses, all that sort of stuff. Just go to geekactually.com. You'll find all of our contact details there. And also, don't forget our Geek Actually show, which you can actually find on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or on our site. That's basically our geek show where we talk about silly stuff like porn parodies of Star Wars and pressed duck. Yummy. Watch us record this show live every Saturday. Yummy. We typically start our broadcasting day around the 12 p.m.-ish mark. It's Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10. The film show is recorded separately, so it usually starts around between 1:30 and 2 o'clock. We always tweet it out, so follow us on Twitter and you'll know exactly when we're starting. GeekActually.com/live. Richard, where can people find more of you?
People
online?
Can find more of me at TheRealBits.com. That's double E-L Bits. You can find me at dvdbits.com for now. And also, for now it's a slowly dying beast. And also on Twitter, where I tweet constantly at dvdbits.
Tweet. Cool. And Josh?
Yeah, I'm all around the internet. I have...
just look on the internet.
Yeah, just Google the internet. I'm there. No, seriously. Wow, that was really self-indulgent. RawDLC.com is a gaming website. You should go and check that out. Hiphoponline.net. No, wait.
No.
.com, right?
Hiphopnet online. No, what is your address?
Hiphopnetonline.com. There we are. One more time. Hiphopnetonline.com. I'm really tired. That is a site that focuses obviously on hip hop. Check it out. Please leave comments. We need a lot of that right now. And apart from that, I wrote a couple of articles for Cinefools lately. So you can go over and check that out.
Excellent.
The internet is a global system of interconnected computer networks that use a standard internet protocol suite, TCP/IP.
Yeah. I'm at the bottom. I'm at the bottom of the article.
Yeah, you got to go to the bottom.
The one that says the internet is shit.
That might be me.
Yeah.
We also want to have a quick shout out to some of our friends, Charlie and Brad at Good Day Sir, the podcast, which is a lot of fun. And you can find that at reboundradio.com. And go check out our good buds, The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, over at weekendronan.com, or you can find their podcast on iTunes as well. They review movies like us, but they like to drink. So it often makes for very interesting reviews.
Like we haven't been drinking this whole time.
All right. We also need to shout out to our good friend Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com, who does our cartoon artwork, and he is awesome. All right. Now, that's it. That's all we're going to do today because it's a very long day. It's a very long show, and we're going to get ourselves out of here. We are going to finish the show this week with a track called We're Going to Fly Now from the Green Lantern soundtrack by James Newton Howard. And as I've said, now this is not my favorite of the superhero soundtracks. I think it was actually kind of weak, but we always play the soundtrack for the film that we review. So here it is. This is actually one of the better tracks from the soundtrack album. If you enjoy the track, remember you can buy it on iTunes, through Amazon, or wherever good music albums are sold. So that's all I've got. Anybody got anything?
That's pretty much me, Dan.
That's it. That's a show.
Let's do it.
In that case, we're going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye now.
Bye.